Welcome to the world of tomorrow!
Good news, everyone! It's Talking Futurama, recorded in an authentic Lovenasium. I'm your host, the vile lizard tongue Bob Mackey, and this is the Talking Simpsons Patreon's chronological exploration of Futurama. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and can't you ask that a little more sexfully?
And who else?
I come from a dimension that's big on musical theater. I'm Matt Jay.
And today's episode is Love's Labor's Lost in Space.
I'm just so lonely.
And today's episode aired on April 13th, 1999. And as always, Henry will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real world history.
Welcome to the world of tomorrow.
Sweet Lion of Zion, Bobby. Jack Kevorkian was sentenced in Pontiac, Michigan to 10 to 15 years in prison for second degree murder. He'll be released on parole June 7th, 2007. Brooke Shields got a divorce from Andre Agassi. And Wilma Flintstone's voice, Jean Vanderpyle, dies of throat cancer at age 79. Aww.
She was the last one, I think.
I believe so. Yeah. The OGs, yeah.
Fran.
And Kevorkian? Krikorian?
Krikorian was the guy on the credit.
Kevorkian's the real guy, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
He's committing assisted suicide with the angels now.
Doing
and
it
and I say, stop it. Sorry. So this episode is the premiere, the introduction of one Zap Brannigan. In the same year, we had Zap Rousedower on Mystery Science Theater.
That's
so
right.
Two great characters named Zap.
And then if you listeners out there haven't seen The Final Sacrifice, I would say that is the first Mystery Science Theater to watch. It's the one I would suggest to new viewers of MST3K.
Is there beer on the sun?
I was thinking of that. It's also Rousedower. Is that a stupid name?
I'm having a series of elaborate heart attacks.
Larry Zonka.
We have so many. We have so many of these. We can't keep going on now.
Wait, let me do one more. The beginning during The Final Sacrifice, when that guy is trying to look sinister, but he's just got a big old smile on his face, and they just keep acting like he's I think the sacrifice is going really well.
Yeah. I also love when Zap,
I have to go home and watch that.
When Zap hands the small man his knife, he's like, oh, I dropped it. Dropped it already. God, you know, we could do a Talking Mystery Science Theater, but it would just be hours long and only clips.
To explain every reference,
yes.
I mean, it would be just a longer than Giant Bomb, even.
Yeah, I have to thumbs up to whoever does the annotated MST3K episodes on YouTube.
On their official YouTube.
On the official YouTube.
That's the Shout Factory one, right?
Shout Factory takes it real seriously. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. But this episode, I forgot everything that happened in it before Zap Brannigan appears, because Zap is such a powerful figure in this that I can't think of anything else in it.
And all of his best scenes are either him alone with Kiff or just monologues. He kind of takes over the show. But he's a fun character and he's got a really fun voice.
The writers clearly were in love with Zap. I'm surprised they didn't have a second Zap episode in season one, that they wait until season two. But by then Zap's in like eight more episodes just in the original run.
Mm-hmm. And originally meant to be played by Phil Hartman, though Billy West did audition for him and is not copying Phil, is doing his own take on the character.
Yeah, I mean, you can hear an influence of Phil Hartman in there, I think.
Yeah, he's called it like a tribute, right? Mm-hmm. He said things like that.
I saw that in other interviews too, and yeah, but it's... I mean, I wonder if they had actually recorded the dialogue with Phil as Zap and then just decided, like, well, he's going to be a regular. We should recast his death was mid-1998.
It was May. Yeah.
Right.
And this is an April 99 episode. So maybe that later that summer they would have recorded this.
Yeah. 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 So, but, well, you know, speaking of Phil Hartman as well, is that. This episode was written by Brian Kelly, who is fresh off of News Radio and wrote some of the best episodes of that show with Phil Hartman on it. Like, he wrote the season finale, which was Phil Hartman's last episode. And
introducing that episode is so sad.
And the Titanic shit, he's the only one who doesn't die in the Titanic as well. It's him and Andy Dick, or Matthew.
I recently, just apropos of nothing, I was watching the Ben Stiller show, I read again all about the death of Phil Hartman, and particularly I was looking for, it had been a long time since I read like the real story that has become apocryphal myth of the time that John Lovitz beat the shit out of Andy Dick in a bar.
Oh, boy.
Are you guys familiar with that
to
story
be,
at all?
To be in that
I've
bar.
Yeah, I wanted to believe.
Have you seen the gif of the critic slamming Andy Dick dressed like his character from Clone High, like animated, where he's slamming? Because the story is that John Lovitz grabbed Andy Dick by the hair and smashed his head into the bar. I think it was the bar at the Comedy Store or something.
Both those guys kind of suck in real life. But Andy Dick sucks more, I would say.
Yeah, and I think John Lovitz punched him because Andy Dick was like, "I put the curse of Phil Hartman on you."
That's what he said. Yeah. Which you're the next to die, he said.
A cool thing to say. I assume he was probably using at that time. I think it's weird. It's hard to know when Andy Dick is like, has cleaned himself up because he goes back to drugs a lot.
He has
sexual assault.
He's an addict. He has a lot of problems. I think he also, that probably came out of, you know, it had been a couple years at that point of people blaming him for the death of a comedy icon, and that probably like really gets you.
I bet that was
probably a big breaking point for him for becoming the weirdo he is today.
And being part of a South Park song that says you will be dead and in hell
in the same year.
Gotta make room for Andy Dick, as the line goes, in Christmas time in hell. Why are we talking about Andy Dick on here?
Sorry, Phil Hartman.
Brian Kelly, though. This is his one Futurama episode. He was a freelancer, and on the commentary, we hear the story of he came in as David X. Cohen quit the show.
Whoa.
Which only comes up once on one commentary, that David Cohen left the show, and then he says he came crawling back 5 days later after getting some sleep. So this first season probably had a really rocky production. I want David Cohen to talk about it, because leaving Futurama, like probably his dream show, to work with Groening to start a show, leaving that just sounds like insane.
How angry could he have been? I mean, you know, well, from Matt's side, it definitely sounded like just working with Fox was very hard.
Oh, yeah.
Like, not easy to do at all. And also that they, but the Brian Kelly, when I found out he wrote this one, the opening part pre-Zap feels so similar to a news radio episode of just, it is an office sitcom where they hang out and decide to go someplace together.
Yeah.
And they also would always do lines like that of talking about Maura Tierney's character's love life, or talking about how unhappy or crazy Dave Foley is. And that show is so good.
It's like, my God, let's do Talking News Radio, because I could do that for years.
It's not animated, but it does have animated characters in it.
It's a cartoon. I loved on the commentaries, I think it was Brian Kelly, all the writers have a million stories about how disgustingly unprofessional they were, but also they talked about how, like, well, how do we come up with this one episode? Well, we had a note on the board that said Andy or Matthew literally gets ants in his pants, and the show went from there. I also, whenever I think of the show, the name News Radio, I do think of a funny podcast appearance by Andy Dick where he tells a story of everyone would get the name of his show wrong, and that this one woman in an airport came up to him and said, like, I loved you in Newspaper.
Newspaper.
And Brian Kelly would go on to work on The Simpsons starting in season 14.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the best time.
Yep.
Well, this episode... Sorry, Matthew, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to point out that this episode gives us a lot more firsts. We get the first Dupe. We get the first Kif, as well as Zap, Nibbler, Leela's relationships issues.
That's right, Nibbler's in this.
Yeah.
And this episode reminded me, like, oh, Futurama is a much hornier show than The Simpsons, and that these are all young single characters who have sex with other people. Like,
I have a lot to say about that.
Yeah.
Well, casual sex in the future.
It's casual. How dare they? They'd need to go to the Space Pope, man. Space Pope.
Space Pope.
So this episode starts with a great little... There's so many good gags, mainly in the first season, of... This would be a joke in the Jetsons, and now we're undoing that. And just the, like, such small portions. Well, if you like these after dinner mints, like, that's such a great little gag.
You know what? I just caught that right now. That is a joke. It's so subtle, but
it's
perfect.
They're eating like a pill meal.
That's your expectations, because you're watching a show about the future. There'll be another. There's one other gag in this one that I think was so subtle. I'm like, oh, I think that's the joke, but I'll explain it when I get there.
I think there's one coming up in this episode or the next one where it's like, oh, that is a joke. It is so tiny and perfect, but it's a joke.
And I have to say, Leela is kind of a jerk for being so judgmental of that lizard tongue.
Let's hear how picky she is.
You're too picky.
Yeah. If you rule out every guy with a lizard tongue or a low IQ or an explosive violent temper, of course you're going to be lonely.
There's nothing wrong with having high standards. Now, can we please stop...
The female Lila's problem is purely medical. Soon she will drop her eggs and they will hatch and all will be well.
You just have to give guys a chance. Sometimes you meet a guy and think he's a pig, but then later on you realize he actually has a really good body.
Thank you all for the inspiring advice. But I'm perfectly happy with my life the way it is.
That sounds like a cry for help.
That's awesome. We found out how shallow Amy is at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lila also doesn't care how many eyes a man has as long as it's less than five.
Yes.
Well,
Amy, no lizard tongue.
Amy is the youngest. Like, she's in her early 20s, and she's like, yeah, I'm just going to have sex with people. Like, who cares? Like,
it's in the future.
I like sexually free Amy before she gets tied down with Kiff. I'm just not as into that, though. That is one of the most fanficky episodes of Comedy Central when they put her with Bender for an episode about robosexuality.
It is one of the later ones I've seen.
Yeah, it's an okay episode, but just the idea of like, Amy hasn't fucked Bender yet, has she?
I was fortunate enough to miss this one. Although, is it good? Is it funny?
It's all right.
Huh. It's okay, yeah.
It was about Proposition 8, which no one remembers that now, since gay marriage marriage equality is the rule of the land. But Proposition 8 was the law voted in California to outlaw same-sex unions. And then they do it in the episode as Proposition Infinity, and they turn the eight sideways in a clever pun.
Delicious.
Delicious.
Jack Black starred in Prop 8 the musical on Funny or Die.
Oh,
that's the only reference point for it that I remember.
Everyone who's not in California needs to care a whole lot about California's laws. That's the message.
It's the most important place.
It is.
So they go to the hip joint. I love the idea of not being aware of future nostalgia. Mm-hmm. Like, you wear rings because rings are stupid.
Yeah. Though the music in there, it drove me crazy.
Did that guy say rings are cool?
No, they're bad.
Cool.
So I got to say, Bender's Gaydar stuff, they're very close-minded in the year 3000 in this one. It's like, he could be gay. They're also, why is Lila attracting all these closeted guys, I wonder?
That is weird.
Is it offensive, or is it just like, no, he's like, no, you just don't waste your time with that guy. He won't be interested.
Well, Bender's many asides are just like, sounds like they want to be in a universe of musical theater, all those. It's like, that sounds like you're judging him for being gay. But also, like, it's a very late 90s joke of like, yeah, that guy's actually gay. That's
the gay circuit.
We have seen Bender jack on with other male robots, though, at this point. So, are you jacking on in there? Which is a joke that as a kid I was like, wow, it's like a cartoon. Actually, I have things to say about that, because this episode was the first one that I missed on first airing.
Oh, wow.
And it haunted me for the rest of the season.
Well, they moved it to Tuesdays. No one could follow it.
I didn't notice. I didn't read Variety or wherever you learn that, TV Guide, I guess. But remember, the commercials just blowing my mind because I was 9 years old. So I was like, I barely know what sex is, but I know it's a thing that mommies and daddies do. So to have like cartoons having casual sex was like me learning about horniness. I was like, oh my god, I have to see this is going to be amazing.
And I'm sure Fox hated that part of it.
Yeah,
totally. Horniness, the sexual characters.
They wanted to be less foxy in those days. You know, they're like, no, we want everything to be a Friends ripoff.
We're news now.
Ugh,
you need to watch us for our serious news.
So now the way I feel about, like, I think in the year 3000, everybody should be like pansexual at the lowest.
Yeah.
Just like, well, yeah, gender is nothing in the year 3000, or should be.
They do hit on that a little bit later. There's some implications between, I think, like, Lila and Amy have some jokes about that, and certain, and I think they do eventually find that. It just takes a season or two.
Yeah, I mean, despite this being in the future, a lot of this that we see in the series, a lot of 90s Battle of the Sexes style comedy that is like, when you go back to Seinfeld, you're like, oh, this has not aged well.
Also, I completely forgot that Fry got lucky in this episode.
That's right, with a 21st century girl.
Yeah, 21st century
girl. Who was a looker. Come on.
She was cute. She will return in The Sting at Fry's funeral, which was actually just a dream in Leela's mind, but she was at his funeral to announce that he is bad at snoo snoo, because one of the Amazon women was there and she's saying snoo snoo. He's like, he wasn't that great at snoo snoo.
Do you think that was Lila harboring old feelings? That this is the first time she saw Fry do it with someone else?
Yeah, that's true. She was so mad that Fry, subconsciously, she's like, how dare Fry go home with this woman and not me? Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what she was thinking.
Well, I did capture one of the men Lila met for a very important reason.
This is M5438, an entity of pure energy.
That's great, really, but he's just not what I'm looking for.
I understand. One day you will evolve. evolve beyond your physical body. Mm-hmm. And on that day, I hope you will pick up the phone.
You're impossible.
Just as well. I think he comes from a dimension that's big on musical theater.
Yes, the gay ball of energy. So I wanted to pull this out because that's Billy West, of course, but he's doing his Jackie Martling impression from the Howard Stern Show.
Oh,
in case you don't know.
Wow. He's the filthiest guy on Howard Stern, Jackie Martling.
He really is. He really is. But so Billy West really made a name for himself. Like at the same time he was on Ren and Stimpy, one of his earliest voice roles, he was also sitting on Howard Stern and basically doing impressions, doing voices, like just doing color commentary. One of the writers there was Jackie Martling. He was a character. And at some point, someone sent in a puppet of him. So throughout the show, Billy West would pick up the Jackie puppet and do voices with it. It's so funny to think that this character was a puppet on a radio show. But there are hours.
I mean, the 30s.
Yes, like it's not Charlie McCarthy, but it still worked. But so I captured this because like you can go onto YouTube and you can find like hours and hours of Billy West doing Jackie puppet stuff. So here is one little clip that is disgusting.
Hey, Jackie, you crack yourself up when you ask for crabs, right?
Crabs.
Imagine somebody asking for crabs.
I know.
Hey, Robin, do you like limericks?
Oh, dear.
Yeah, Jackie.
Okay, here we go. There was a young man named Dave who kept a dead whore in a cave. He said it was hell, but when he gets past the smell, think of the money he'd save.
And that is some classic Howard Stern comedy.
Oh, my God.
This is the saucy puppet Joe Bender wants in his life.
It was.
Come on. I was all leading to that. I was leading on to that.
Oh, my.
I do not condone the words of the Jackie puppet, by the way.
We also talked about this voice in a previous episode. Because,
that's right.
That is a vocal trick that Billy West can do that not many people can do, where he's talking in a high and a low octave at the same time. He's using two parts of his voice, which is also how he does his Popeye voice.
I believe they heard that, they mentioned on the commentary that they thought there was feedback on the mic. They're like, oh, this is fucking up the mic. You're like, no, this is just, that's Billy. Don't turn off equipment. It's him. I like that he, that gaseous ball of light fucks Amy as well.
But she goes home with it.
Everybody but Bender goes home. But I guess like this is before we know that Bender likes pornography, robot pornography.
I mean, he's definitely going to be playing with his antenna that night, I'm thinking. But
jacking on.
But the though also that cloud is one of the first of many Star Trek references in this episode. There are eight, I would say there are at least eight episodes of the original series where a godlike being who's basically a flashlight shows up to be like, I will make you do things. And then he learns a lesson from Kirk by the end of it. Though I think this one is most like the Dick Ironium cloud creature from TOS.
That sounds filthy.
I know. If Cat Bailey was here, she could correct me on that. But that's the that is, I believe, looking at Memory Alpha, the wiki for Star Trek information, I believe that's the one.
What website's that on?
Yeah, bad one.
They also actually fight one of those guys later on with the cast of the original Star Trek.
That's true, yeah.
A wonderful episode.
I love when that one ends and Fry says, wow, we learned something from a godlike being. Where would we have seen that before? He's like, episodes blank, 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 and blank.
They couldn't get Scotty, but they got Welshie.
Yeah. Welshie! Jinx.
Oh, no, now I can't talk.
We find out about their new mission now.
This is Virgon 6.
It's a sunny little doomed planet inhabited by a number of frisky little doomed animals.
Animals?
That's right. Animals in desperate need of rescue. You see, Virgon 6 was once filled with the super dense substance known as dark matter, each pound of which weighs over 10,000 pounds.
Wait, what about the animals?
Well, dark matter is extremely valuable as starship fuel. That's why it was all mined out, leaving the planet completely hollow.
Yes, but what about the animals?
The what?
The animals.
I didn't say anything about animals. Now, it seems the planet will collapse within 3 days. Incidentally, this will kill all the animals.
So we have to bring back two of each kind. Just like Noah's Ark.
Why two? Wow.
I love Leela's growing frustration throughout that scene. It's
Bender
great.
Doesn't know. He just was with them to go have sex, but he does not understand that other mammals have to have sex as well. I just love how many times like the animal's like, what? Yeah. What?
A
animals?
Woman getting talked over by men in a business meeting.
that's also great. But I also love the this is Virgon 6. This is Virgon 6.
Splug.
That's a cool effect, watching the dark matter get mined out. That's mm-hmm. You can tell it's just like a randomizer set on it, but it looks like it's showing it get picked out through layer by layer.
I also like how they're lit by the glowing green hologram. They're all lit very well.
Oh,
the colors are great.
That is great. The hologram work in most of these are really good. I also, another reference to this, a Star Wars reference, the grid that goes around mm-hmm. the dark matter is straight out of the first Star Wars. I think it's pretty much, there's multiple grids like that, but in the Millennium Falcon shooter cockpit, whatever. Mm-hmm. The place where they shoot things in the Millennium Falcon, that's the same grid.
I don't know.
The Falcon's nest. I also like when Billy's talking as the professor, he puts a little English on that three, like the way he rolls through it.
He's like the friggin' owl in the tree talking about Tootsie Pops.
And just how many times, like, animals? I don't think
all the animals.
And that as we will find out later, that dark matter is shit, and so the planet was full of shit. Like, it was a toilet for Nibbler's race.
It worked out, though.
Yeah.
Kept the planet intact.
And this is the first of many plot lines on Futurama that are about fossil fuels. Like, this is mm-hmm. about how doomed you are for counting on fossil fuels.
And basically just how every society, even in the future, will just destroy all planets just for resources.
They gotta get those resources. Who cares?
So on the way to Virgon 6, we finally meet Zap Brannigan.
These new uniforms are pretty snappy, eh, First Officer?
I suppose, Captain. I'm not as big a fan of velour as you are. Now, what do you want to do about that unidentified ship?
Destroy them! Let's get a nice feel to it.
So that's the first appearance. Oh. I love the man skirts they all wear.
Yeah.
And like how he's sort of like, you can even tell before his clothes come off, he's kind of paunchy under that. Like, there's a little bit of a bulge.
So he is Kirk. That's his thing.
Yeah,
he's,
for sure.
He's Kirk if Captain Kirk was real. In the fiction of all the Star Trek stuff, Captain Kirk is always right. His moves are, he always chooses the right thing, and he's smarter than everybody. But in, I feel, a more real world, Captain Kirk would be a boorish idiot who fucks over everybody and counts on everyone around him to save him, and also thinks he's better at having sex than he is, and also so vain that he has this giant paunch that is barely contained by his suit.
That's more of an older Shatner thing, though. I think they're drawing to the T.J. Hooker days for that.
Yeah, they're pulling all the Shatners together. Because Shatner, when you watch Star Trek, he's still... When people make those jokes about Kirk, they're always referencing the movies.
Because
on the show, he's ripped.
It's
maybe
fit,
season three, he gets a little puffy.
He's like 60s fit, where it's like not like today fit, where you have to dehydrate yourself for 3 days to have like one shot of you with your shirt off.
Yes, exactly. And it's the same kind of rippedness that Adam West had in the 60s Batman, like pure West.
But
that was what people accepted as, oh, this is a hot man. He is in great shape. Mm-hmm. He isn't fat.
He lifts big triangular weights up and down.
But just like how Zap Brannigan is William Shatner, or rather Captain Kirk, Kif is Spock. Kif is what Spock mm-hmm. should be acting like in front of Captain Kirk. Not like, actually, Captain, I believe it says. He's just like,
sex, Lexia.
And he just constantly has to go like, Captain, I'm not sure why you want that. He's like, you're such an idiot. Like, he's, and then that's one thing why you like Kirk in all the movies still, that they had to have like 8 lines per movie in the TOS movies of Spock saying like, you're my best friend, Kirk, and I respect you so much, and you're my friend. They had to have that so many times, just so. And in real life, Leonard Nimoy said a million times like, no, you're my friend, I wouldn't do that. Like, you're my good friend, Captain Kirk. Like, but it's Kif is so great. I do like exasperated Kif more than wussy Kif.
I agree. And Krusty actually has a good theory on a later episode, in that if the person being humiliated has dignity, that's when it's funny. When he has no dignity, it's not funny. And then eventually, removed from Zap Brannigan, we learn that Kif has no dignity. Everyone pushes him around. He has no self-esteem. But in this, it's like he is a competent person who is just forced to be with this asshole, and he resents it every second.
Yeah, instead of being like a spineless worm who's bad at everything and giggles when he's full of tadpoles, it's like, he has a lot less dignity in later episodes. In this one, he's just a guy who fucking hates Zap Brannigan and can't stand him.
I feel like he's on a sliding scale of defiancy. Like, I'm sure he was very, he stood up for himself a lot more earlier, but he's in that position where you've been at the same job with like the shitty boss for a year and you're like, fine, like whatever, your dumb decisions don't affect me as much as they used to, so do whatever you want, you idiot, and I'll keep collecting my paycheck.
I guess by staying close to Zap, he doesn't die. Yeah. He's not killed like all of his men, like in this story.
Hello, I'm Leela, captain of the Planet Express delivery ship. We've come aboard to plead for your assistance.
Well, if there's anything to...
I'm in command here. Zap Brannigan. Has my fame preceded me, or was I too quick for it?
No, not at all. I'm just so really thrilled to meet you.
You're an impressive piece of captain. Beautiful and deadly. A potent combination.
You don't mean that.
But I do. I doubt I've seen more than 3 or 4 captains sexier than you, and only one who was deadlier. Huh. I heard one time you single-handedly defeated a horde of rampaging somethings in the something-something system. The Killbots? A trifle. It was simply a matter of outsmarting them. Wow, I never would have thought of that. You see, Killbots have a preset kill limit. Knowing their weakness, I sent wave after wave of my own men at them until they reached their limit and shut down. Kif, show them the medal I won.
Kif just points to it.
Yeah, the medal's on his chest. Yeah.
Maurice LaMarche is a master of exasperation.
He's really good as Kif.
This reminds me, too, of when the Trump presidency was new, that Billy West would get Trump quotes and read them as Zap.
That's right.
And even on a few, he got Maurice to be with him during the recording as well.
And just, Nixon, he did it as Futurama's
Nixon, too. And I like that in this opening scene here, through Leela, you get to see what the world thinks of Zap or Kirk. They're just like, oh yeah, he is an awesome dude. He saved everybody,
yeah,
right?
She's taken in by him before she learns how he really is.
He's like American Sniper. Exactly. I don't think he's so great.
All I know about the movie is the fake baby.
He was a racist.
Okay, the
story of American Sniper should be, you know what, I'm not going to say shit about this guy.
We don't need to go in. I'm sorry.
We're right by a window, Henry. Come on.
But also...
What's that red dot?
But also I like right before that Zap wants to have a light dinner, and he defines a light dinner as having a Sunday bar, which is like, that's not very light. But just,
lots of cheese on whatever that is.
It's such ravioli. A rich guy thing. He said he wanted ravioli, and he got it, which I was pro them drawing that. They did draw the ravioli for him. And I feel like there's never been a darker joke about Zap as a leader than that he basically did genocide on his men to win. Like, he killed, you don't get the number, but those Killbots probably killed a lot of people.
And that it's his only accomplishment that he's clearly been riding since it happened. Because Fry is like, the something and the somethings. Oh, the Killbots? Like, he knows exactly what he's talking about because it's the one thing he's ever done that's important.
That's true.
And he probably got promoted 10 times for it up to this position. He probably was like, whatever level that would be, a general, I guess.
And also, Zap starts with a Stardate reading, just like on Star Trek. And he is doing all these Kirk poses from his Kirk chair as well.
And we even get his version of the Prime Directive.
We're hoping to save the animals of Virgon 6 from extinction. And if you could just...
Virgon 6! This light dinner is over.
Wait, what's wrong?
The Democratic Order of Planets prohibits interfering with undeveloped worlds. It's a little rule known as Brannigan's Law.
But people already interfered. That planet was mined completely hollow.
Yes, by a Democratic Order of Planets mining crew.
This doesn't make any sense.
I don't pretend to understand Brannigan's Law. I merely enforce it.
Fine. We'll save the animals without your help.
I'm afraid I can't allow that. Guards! What just happened?
He's throwing us in prison.
Dang. Can I get this wrapped up?
Sorry, Dang. Matthew. I think I cut you off.
I forget what I was going
to
say.
Well, the way Zap looks at Kif when asked about wrapping that up is Kif knows he's being told to wrap it for him, and he's like,
have the boy do it, you.
and yeah, it was the light dinner. And that there's also a doubled up joke, a gag they will redo in War is the H Word, that it's like, little more, little more, lot more. That's the same gag he does on being having his butt scrubbed by Kev, like, lower. A lot lower.
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 There's one joke I caught for the first time. Maybe I caught it before, but it's like Futurama is so densely written that even exposition has jokes written into it that, that don't need to be there. But it's pointed out that the Democratic Order of Planets came up with this Prime Directive law, but they also were the people who mine the planet. Yes. So it's like, you can't go there because these people already went there and ruined it.
And they destroyed it, so you can't go there. Yeah, and that he, well, he also had the line earlier, in the game of chess, you could never let your adversary see your pieces. and that it, while he is strategizing, they get on the ship, too. And I love the design of the guards, the dupe guards on the ship, too. They're really cool.
Dupe is a good excuse for them to have a lot of cool designs. Like, when they're at the actual dupe facility, which is like the future UN, get to see all these like Star Trek references, like the half black, half white guys and the yarn people.
Their outfits are basically the same as the ones in the original series films, except without pants. Mm-hmm. It's just the top. They're bottomless.
And then
otherwise.
They would do in Wars of the H where they just take the Verhoeven movie.
Starship Troopers.
They just wear the Starship Troopers outfits.
That Dupe logo looks like a cool Gen X soda from the 90s. Like that, it would be on a can, yes.
Yeah, I like that. It's really cool. And the Dupe, Dupe is such a dumb name for the Federation, pretty much. And yeah, he just locks them up, and he still thinks he's the hero of it, too. And that the only joke that really is flat for me in this episode is when he says, "Is that right, men? You suck." I was like, you gotta written a better thing for someone to yell at him.
It is funny, just nobody's moving, though, in that shot.
Yes. Yeah, I do
they
like
really
that.
Resent him.
And I feel like it's also kind of a commentary on how in Star Trek, they're just explorers, and they are supposed to have no more military, but it's like the most militarized thing, and they still have like military titles, and they still they still have like weapons on their ships and have to fight people.
And also, all of Zap's men are wearing red shirts, so they're all disposable. I don't know if that's a joke that's on purpose, but I thought of it while watching this.
I like that. I hope sure it's intentional,
Although by TNG, the captain wore a red shirt. So.
That's true. And he never died. He just got Borged a few times.
Borged right in the brain.
So Zap invites Leela to the Lovenasium.
Welcome to my humble chamber. Or as I call it, the Lovenasium. Shampagan.
I didn't realize you were such a connoisseur.
Well, I have studied abroad. Or two.
Captain, if we could speak seriously for a moment, I'd like you to reconsider letting us rescue those animals.
This is waterbed moving across the floor.
I like your style. I find it very erotic.
What?
Erotic! 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 Erotic!
I like to think that was just him saying erotic over and over again.
Me too.
And not an echo. That he just constantly keeps saying it.
I'm surprised they didn't go for that joke.
They should have cut back to him still just saying erotic, erotic, just his face over and over again. Kiffin, his nightcap is pretty funny. That makes it funnier.
In his little like Japanese apartment.
He's got the tiniest little cubicle to sleep in compared to the Lovenasium. And
it's true. Harry Potter had it better.
That's true. And this scene really shows you, like, more than anyone else, Zap Brannigan is in love with himself. He's got a giant JFK presidential portrait of himself behind the bed. There are like Greek statues of him like holding up the corners of the room. Like he does, like he's more into himself than sleeping with a woman.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's why sometimes they think he's gay or he's worried he's gay. Just like, well, you're just in love with yourself. So a man is closer to that sometimes. And, you know, right before that scene, so there is a bit that I think is a very subtle joke, a very writerly joke. So Zap says, "I've never faced a more formidable female adversary." If he just said foe, it would have been alliterative and smarter. He's so close. I'm like, such a formidable female foe. But he's not smart enough
That's
to
great.
Do it. I take that as a joke.
It definitely is a writerly joke, yeah.
Yeah.
Just like the idea, like a writer would understand that's bad writing. Mm-hmm.
And I also love how he tells Kiff, like, "You're my best friend, but you've earned my contempt once again."
Kennedy is a good pull, too. I'm sure they were putting a little Kennedy in there. Like, his hair looks like Kennedy. His jawline looks like Kennedy.
He's also puffy like Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He looks like more like Kennedy than Kirk, and then his mannerisms and voice are more Kirkish.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Kirk and Kennedy come from the same boisterous macho-ness of the 60s as well.
60s cool guy.
And same like Kennedy probably thought he was quite the Lothario, too, when he's like, "You're just a rich kid."
Yeah, before the Beatles fucked it up by being four really hot twinks.
How dare they?
And Bender and Fry are in jail, and they open the steam vent, and it's full of steam, so they can't escape.
Oh, do you not have that? That's my favorite joke.
I didn't get that
clip. I love that line.
I only brought it up because I just posted a screenshot because I was doing research, and I thought, oh, it's a funny scene. And then someone turned that into a steamed ham meme.
Oh, I thought you did that.
No, somebody else did, where Bender and Fry are Skinner and Chalmers, and the steamed ham vent is full of steamed hams.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yes. Like,
and Bill Oakley gave it a thumbs up.
It was so great that the guy, they say, like, well, let's go through the steamed clam vent. Oh, no, it's full of steamed hams. And I just love how stupid... That's the extent of Fry's escape plan. He's like, let's go through the steam thing. It's full of steam.
But it made their prison stay much better. They had a nice steam after that.
Coming Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights at 11 on Cartoon Network. Yeah! Boom! The action cartoon sci-fi comedy drama that redefines action cartoon sci-fi comedy dramas.
What the hell was that?
Futurama!
This is fantastic.
Futurama!
It's gonna be fun on the bun.
Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights at 11. And there's only one place you can find it. On a TV equipped to receive action cartoon sci-fi comedy dramas.
What does that mean?
Futurama! Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights at 11. Starting Sunday on Cartoon Network.
Here is more of Zap being a sexual predator.
You look like a woman who enjoys the finer things. Come over here and feel my velour bedspread.
I'm not really in the mood.
Leela, it's real velour. Just let yourself go.
Can I please just go back to prison?
You'd rather sit in prison than spend one evening with the Zapper?
Much rather. What are you doing?
Oh, God, I'm pathetic. Sorry. Just go. You want the rest of the champagne?
No, and it's pronounced champagne.
Oh, God, no!
That's line of the show. That's.
Oh. I get so lonely. I just thought you, a fellow captain, would understand.
Forget it.
Yeah, it's great ordering people around and stuff, but through it all, you're completely alone.
It comes with the job.
I'm just so lonely.
Oh, come on. Cheer up. It's not that bad.
Yeah, I mean, Billy gets a little too close to Fry doing that, those like ranges, but it's still, I would still give that line
of
the show.
He's almost stimpy. Like, he almost goes in,
I'm just so lonely.
Oh, wait, you're serious? Let me laugh even harder.
That was our line of the show. Yes. Yeah. Not expecting that the first time you see Zap Brannigan to be that minute. I mean, he's a creep, but you wouldn't expect him to use that trick.
He hits the bottom so fast, but also, well, I think he's coming from a real place of like, when he thinks about it, he is pathetic, but he also knows that's his last line of defense in tricking a woman into sex.
Right.
It's classic coercion and gaslighting and all the words you want to use. Like, he's doing exactly all the bad things.
But I do love when he finds out it's champagne. He's like, oh, God, no.
Everything's crumbling. He's the most fragile man that when confronted with any flaw of his, he totally falls apart.
Having been an adult for a while, I was barely an adult when this was airing. I was like 16. It's like having had relationships. I'm like, this is disgusting. Like, he should be in prison.
I think the opening of the show with Leela and her dating things, they don't say it out loud, but it does establish that she maybe hasn't had sex in a while, and perhaps that also puts her in the position of like, I don't know, fine, I'll fuck this guy. I am also lonely.
In the act break, though, it seems like she's surprised it happened. Like, she's just realizing it happened.
She let the emotions come take her over, but... They don't make a joke that it was short, but I have
to assume so.
I have to think it was 5 minutes tops.
There was like a premature ejaculation joke in this episode earlier. Yes. It was like quick and fast. Yeah, hard and fast.
And it's like, I go back and forth. I struggle with myself where I'm like, was there some kind of chemical?
She did not drink the champagne.
Okay, I think that was an intentional choice just to make sure the viewers know like she was not like date raped or whatever.
Yeah,
too dark for Futurama.
She was 100% sober not even a little tipsy trick talked into it, just manipulated into it by the zapper.
Good old-fashioned zapper magic.
And as a kid, like, when I was, you know, learning about how deep a character can be even in a cartoon and that you can have these gray areas, I think I just assumed for, like, a while, like, well, she didn't really sleep with him. She just doesn't want to say she didn't or something like that. Because, like, Leela is supposed to be the put-together one. This is the episode where we learn that she's as fragile as everyone around her and has her own insecurities.
Hey, Leela said they just talked, so...
And that, because again, I missed this episode. So later on, when Zap says something like, you know, we have a history, and Fry's like, what does that mean? And Bender's like, that means you did it. As a kid, I was like, yeah, but she's hiding it. She doesn't want to say she didn't, or something like that. Because I just didn't understand that someone so put together in a TV show, because cartoons and shows have taught me, no, if we're telling you this character is put together and the smartest one in the room, they're always the smartest one in the room. So it was like a learning experience for me to learn, like, oh, everyone has flaws, everyone makes mistakes.
I like that, because up until this point, Leela was boring and too put together and too smart and too perfect. Mm-hmm. Now we're seeing, like, she can be desperate, she can make mistakes. Mm-hmm. She can't have, like, too much pride.
And I like the history that this becomes in the show, that I feel like most of Brannigan episodes, he will mention that he's had sex with Leela, and she's like, it was once. Stop it.
And it's probably the most recent sexual experience he's had for the rest of the
episode. Oh, no, he did get some snoo-snoo.
He did get some snoo-snoo, and he tries to be a prostitute in the Urban Cowboy.
Oh, right.
Or no, Midnight Cowboy, not the John Travolta film.
That's Brannigan Begin Again.
Yes.
I think maybe that, War is the Age, where it isn't as much of a showcase for him as that, but I think Brannigan Begin Again is the perfect platonic Zap Brannigan episode.
Could be my favorite.
I also know in the Comedy Central seasons, there was an episode that's kind of this in full, of Leela and Zap get stuck on a planet that Zap pretends they are trapped on and almost coerces her into sex, and then she finds out, like, oh, we could have left at any time.
Yeah, they kind of fall in love a little bit, where she starts seeing him as a guy, like, she starts seeing him as, oh, when he's confronted with, you know, certain death, he can get himself together and pull his shit together, but he was lying to her.
That must have been an early Comedy Central one, because I did see that, and I was like, man, this show got way hornier on Comedy Central.
I think it's the first season back after the movies.
I think so.
Yeah, because I definitely watched the one after Wild Green Yonder, where they explain how everyone is somehow not dead. That was like the third time, like, oh yeah, you all died, and then I brought you back. Mm-hmm. Like, I also like that once sex is over, then you get to see Zap exactly who he is. Like, the way they draw his paunch, his belly,
it keeps growing.
Yeah, but it also, like, falls with its. When he sits on his side, the belly hangs with, like, such a realistic gravity to it.
It's not the perfect, like, pear belly that Homer and every male Simpsons character has. It actually looks like a big slab of fat.
It's kind of, it's a little cubish.
Yeah.
Like, it's a little, it's got that, it's like a beer belly. Mm-hmm. It's got that, when you, like, you know, if you hit it, it would slap. It wouldn't, like, jiggle too much. But also, they mentioned in the commentary that originally when he stands up, you know, inform the men, that line, he had his arms on his hips and was just standing brazenly nude in front of Kip, but they had to change it to him holding the blanket with the one hand.
I'm guessing Kip would have been blocking his junk then.
Probably. Frames. Kip or, like, the champagne bottle or something would have been, something champagne. Small would have been in the way.
Well, let's hear Leela sneaking away from
I love set. This.
Good morning, lover.
Listen, Zap.
Now you're officially my woman. Yeah. Kudos. I can't say I don't envy you.
Zap, last night was a mistake.
A sexy mistake.
No, just a regular sexy mistake. For a split second, my common sense was overwhelmed by pity.
A split second is all it takes. That's why sooner or later you'll come crawling back to the zapper.
The only kind of crawling I'm doing to you is away. From.
Leela, you're obviously confused and aroused.
Look, I'm going down to Virgon 6 to save those animals, whether you like it or not.
Go ahead. I won't stop you.
Threaten all you... Wait, what?
We both know you won't make it halfway to Virgon 6 before the craving sets in. Then you'll come crawling back for another taste of sweet, sweet candy. Bam.
Everyone is groaning at Zap Brannigan in this episode. But no, he says all it takes is a split second.
That is true.
Yeah. So it was fast.
And also, sweet, sweet candy.
He sounds like a movie trailer.
He touches his hip, his love handle.
He has to say candy. Not candy.
Before the craving sets in. He sounds like he's like an old, like, Grindhouse movie trailer.
Or like a Snickers commercial.
Yeah.
That's true. And
Nougat.
Also, Leela's writerly joke, too, of, like, the only crawling I'm going to be due to you is away. from.
That's another Futurama word joke, because we've talked about it a few times. That's another, because like in sci-fi, everyone's snappy. Everyone's got perfect snappy quips, especially in Star Trek, and she screws it up. She realizes she left a word out.
It did remind me of See You in Hell from Heaven. So they finally make it to Virgon 6, and we get some a cute little montage of these weird different animals that they rescue.
Oh, right before they get to Virgon 6, I do like, there's a little something sinister to Kif that never really comes back when
Kif lets
them go, and then they're like, why do you let them go? It's like, why indeed? Like that. And then Kif already had to inform all the men that Zap had sex. Mm-hmm.
This has happened before, what's happening here, right?
Probably once before.
One of them points, someone says, like, what does that mean, or something like that. Like, they point out, what does he mean?
Nothing.
So after we rescue all the animals, there's a purple fruit snake, which looks such like a Macarena drawing come to life. Not even like a Futurama artist. Like, Macarena drew that snake, and they put it in the show.
I love the animal stuff, because it's very Looney Tunes-y, just silent. You get to see Bender get eaten and then walk the snake to the ship inside the snake. The windy shrimp. And then my favorite was, this is Fry is starting to get as dumb as he normally is, that he can't tell the difference between the mimic horse and Leela.
He throws the net over Leela.
Throws the net over Leela.
I have recently watched this episode now three times. I watched it on New Year's Eve. I watched it for this podcast and again with the commentary. And Wendy Shrimp gets a laugh out of me every time. It's just such a funny...
It's such a tiny thing with some immense winds coming out of it.
Yeah, it sounds like an insult Matt Gourley would call somebody. You windy shrimp.
And we finally meet Nibbler.
Oh, the music.
Hello there. He doesn't seem to be on the checklist.
So you're saying we can cook him?
Barbecue. I'll wear my hilarious apron.
No, I don't care how hilarious your apron is. We're not cooking him. Aww. I'll call him Nibbler.
Aww. I'll fire up the grill.
I hope he'll be okay in there with all those big animals.
So Nibbler, voiced by Frank Welker, who's done every incidental animal noise you've ever heard for the past, I don't know, 40 years.
I was thinking about that recently, that like that dude's getting up there. When he is gone, animals will sound different in movies and television, because he's a Boo. He's like every horse you've ever seen.
Scooby-Doo.
He's
every Hanna-Barbera dog.
Yes, he's now Scooby-Doo. He wasn't originally, and he took over when that guy died.
Don Messick,
yes.
I just knew he was Scooby-Doo because it was a very sweet little video that Kate Micucci shared of her, Gray Delisle, who is the voice of Daphne, and Freddie were clearly recording something, and they wanted to do like, hey, the cast of Scooby-Doo says good luck to all you Olympians. I was like, this is cute.
Kate's Velma now.
Oh, she's that's right.
Something. There's always like three casting. Scooby-Doo shows. That's, yeah, right? She is Velma Dinkley.
I want her to be Velma for the next 40 years. Like, until her death, just like Gray Delisle is until Daphne until her death.
So I have two voice actorly things in this clip, which is one, of course, Frank Welker, who's and he's also like, so Tales of Intrigue. Like, or is that
that's Maurice LaMarche?
He does some announcer voices on here. Show.
Yeah, he's also, I guess, his most famous non-animal would be Megatron, I would think. Well, maybe to 80s kids
or
like
Fred.
Me anyway. Yo, it is Fred.
Kids love Slimer, everybody. Come on. Yes.
Yeah.
This is a very Slimery voice.
It is. It is very Slimery. Yeah. I think also in function, Nibbler is very Slimery as well.
Spudhead. But also the like wonderful read for everyone's great in this scene, but the wonderful read of John DiMaggio talking from the very back of his throat. So you mean we can cook him like that way? Like, he's straining sometimes to sound like Bender, because like Bender just flows in and out of like him shoving in this early ones. He's doing almost an uncomfortable sounding voice because he's shoving that voice so far in the back, and later he finds a more natural.
Is he leaning
way
into the scene to say that line? Because they joke on the commentaries like Bender is always like leaning into a scene to make a joke and then leaning out.
That's true.
And you can hear the physicality of that in the voice. You're right. That's really good.
You're saying we can cook up like just like that. Bender is cool as a cucumber, but also hearing him stuff that voice so far back and not have as natural a sound as he does later.
And Welker is Nibbler when he talks as well.
That's right.
In future episodes when the big reveal happens of Nibbler.
That might be what I'm thinking, because Nibbler narrates some stuff. So I'm maybe thinking of him being Nibbler as a narrator.
Well, yeah. At the end of the Brain Invaders episode, he narrates the ending and explains that no one else remembers except for him, which is then extra funny because in Bender's big score, he reveals himself again, and everybody's like, oh yeah, we know you can talk. And then he's like, what? they're like, well, the last time you did it, you didn't erase our memories, which was not in the episode. And so he's like, so you've been cleaning up my shit for months now while you knew I'm normal, mm-hmm. or I'm intelligent? They're like, yeah.
Yeah. And I can pontificate.
Yes. This is his first full appearance, as we all know, as Futurama fans. He is in shadow in the first episode. Mm-hmm.
And I do want to say that I want to think that Matt Groening had more control over the art of Futurama than he did on The Simpsons, because
I think he did.
Artist and comic artist Casey Green pointed out on Twitter when I brought up this episode, like, oh, Nibbler is a total Matt Groening life and hell drawing. It's like, it's very ugly, but you could tell it's not like cleaned up by animators. It's as ugly as Matt Groening wanted it to be. So Nibbler has an eye stalk. He's got one giant nostril. He's got vampire fangs, a diaper, and a cape.
Yes, he said in the commentary, true. He's like, this is like the ugliest adorable character.
Yeah.
Like, he's so cute.
That was his goal.
Yeah. That's, and, you know, I brought that up before. I feel like this is much more Groening show than anything else. And I think it's partly what I love about it. It feels like a passion project.
Yeah. Well, I love too that they make the cutest character kills everything. He's a killing machine, as Lilo will call him.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Hey, what the?
Where'd they all go?
All Welker.
Nibbler.
I can't believe we flew halfway across the galaxy and enjoyed a steam just to get lunch for that stupid animal.
He's pending for a bending.
Leave him alone. It's not his fault that he's an unstoppable killing machine.
So Bender ate all the animals they rescued.
Nibbler.
Oh, sorry, Nibbler. Bender wanted to eat all the animals they rescued.
He did, yeah.
That becomes a kind of a catchphrase for Bender. Tu es pending para un bending,
Encho in Mexico, as bending, as we know with Bender Bending Rodriguez.
Every commentary that is a show that Frank Welker's on, somebody, usually another voice actor, shares a different story about what an incredible man he is. Where on this one, John DiMaggio says, he says something about, like, yeah, I once saw him do a flock of seagulls in one take. Like, he did a whole flock of them without pausing.
Al Jean tells a story of that he can do a cat and dog fighting at the same time.
Seth MacFarlane's also told that story. That's the other one's going to say.
He's ripping off Family Guy again.
Yeah, on Santa's Little Helper heavy episodes, he's usually playing Santa's Little Helper on The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Usually it's Dan Castellaneta doing a fine job, but when it's just about him, they bring in Frank Welker.
Mm-hmm. Dan Castellaneta can do a good, like,
Bart.
He can also do a seagull dying, like, but if they need a little more, they go with Welker. Mm-hmm. I also do love the gag, the verbal gag of that Bender got a pair of hermaphromingos, which is one. And he's like, I got a pair of these. Like, it's that's funny. Literal way.
One is wearing a hat, the other one has eyelashes. Is that how sexual dimorphism works?
It's like a do-duo.
Yeah.
I love the Nibblers, like, sucks up one of their feet like a noodle.
It's pretty gruesome. They're being eaten alive.
Yes, yeah. It's so cruel. It reminds me that South Park at the time was doing things like that too, of conservationists defeated by nature killing itself, which I do like the futility of it. It's a very cynical outlook on conservationism and environmentalism, but it is
sad,
funny.
Dark message.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, you want to save all these animals? Well, they want to kill each other. What you gonna do?
So the planet is kerploding, as Fry says, and they have to reach out.
He jumps out of the ship! Yes. Like,
and they have to reach out to Zap Brannigan for help.
Oh my God!
Oh, how could you, Leela? I thought you had some standards. I mean, geez, he's a dumb, gross gorilla.
That's enough. Don't you think I feel bad enough already?
No.
All right, I'll call him. I mean, if living is that important to you.
And that's why you'll never make Captain Kiff.
Hello, Zap.
Well.
Zap, we're out of fuel, and Virgon 6 is about to implode. We need your help.
So, crawling back to the Big Z like a bird on its belly. Delicious.
Birds don't crawl.
They've been known to.
Look, are you going to rescue us or not?
Can't you ask a little more sexfully?
And that's it.
Then he's at, and then she looks over at Fry and Ben and are like, come on, we don't want to die.
Yeah, and I say, I've had a bird for 15 years. It's never crawled.
I would think a hurt bird might crawl, perhaps, one that can't fly, but Jesus. Yeah. And I feel so bad for Leela that she is so shamed by having to do this just to save her life.
Yeah, that's bad of, it's also bad of Fry and Bender to shame her for it.
I mean, Fry, I'm actually shocked Fry is even observant enough to be like, oh, Zap is a bad person to have sex with. Mm-hmm. Like he would even know that he's a bad partner to then shame her. But yeah, it's not nice of them to shame her for like sex. Like they're not shaming him for having sex with Amazon women or Sarah Silverman voiced girlfriends in the past.
Or anything Bender does. Yeah. But there is a thing earlier in the episode that I forgot to mention, which is I really love how openly they're talking about Leela's relationship issues while she's right behind them. Not because that's a very rude thing to do, but because like Fry is in love with Leela, but he's always very supportive of her and finding her bliss and her own happiness.
That's true.
And I appreciate that in his character.
It's a classic reveal where they're talking about the character and then it pulls out so that the character is right there in the room with
except
them.
They don't care.
Yeah.
I love that Bender is just like, just find a good guy with two eyes and poke one out. That's him being supportive in his own way.
Yeah.
I also like
you
the touch. I love the touch tone space phone as well.
That's right. The phone technology changes with every episode.
And also the Kith. I feel like I've had that conversation with the boss too, who think they're being nice, and then like, and that's why you'll never make captain.
Yeah, they always gotta throw in one thing.
And then he thinks he's being friends with Kif as well. He's like, you're my best friend, but I'm not gonna have much time to spend with you after Leela.
And eventually Nibbler's poop saves the day.
What the hell was that?
Phew.
I don't believe it. It's dark matter.
So this guy just unloaded a steaming pile of starship fuel?
His species must have filled the entire planet with it. Did you do that, you cute little... Come on. That should be more than enough fuel to get us out of here. Bender, pick it up and put it in the engine.
I put on the plastic.
I love the very, you can really tell how heavy it is, especially when he throws it into the number two. This thing has like a freaking railroad steam engine
it's
it runs
so
on.
Great.
You just toss it into the fire.
I love that, into like a furnace, and a furnace that would be old in 1999. I do love that, and I forgot to mention how much I love the gag of, we laughed at it at the moment, but like 1 pound of it weighs 10,000 pounds.
Yes.
So Bender has
one pound of which, yeah.
And this is the first of several jokes that combine, you know, him pooping with a dog pooping or a cat pooping. Like we see him do it on the street and one of them has to pick it up. We see them do it in a litter box and Fry's pick it up, but he can't.
And Bender puts like a little bag around his hand to get the poop like you would with a dog too.
Yes. I mean, it's implied that it smells very badly. The niblonium, as it will later be called, or dark matter, it wasn't Nibbler's plan to be found, but he will just follow them along until the brains invade. That was Virgon 6 was just where the Niblonian people hang out and shit. Like, it's just where it's their toilet.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. And some of the animals survive. The planet Kerplodes, and I'm sure they'll die very soon.
They would starve to death immediately.
But they're on these little tiny planetoids, barely like little tiny chunks of rock floating through space.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And that Leela tries to make her own Stardate log in there while being in her underwear, which that felt like, oh, this is the first time you guys are drawing something for yourselves here.
Were you going to say it's like Marge being naked in her bed?
No, I was going to say, again, a very horny episode.
Yeah.
It's just like, we can draw women in their underwear. We're free.
Yes, finally.
And the animals on that planet could be a Little Prince reference.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, I think you're right.
Or at least drawing them that way. Or a Mario Galaxy reference before it came up.
That's true. Yeah, you know what? I'm with you on that Little Prince thing. I think it's at least a little informed by that. And, you know, this conservationist streak in Leela will come back with a vengeance in the problem of poplars. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of setting that up as well, I would say.
A show that's very kind to vegetarians.
Oh, yeah. They love them. They love them. They love eating vegetarians.
It's true. This episode ends with two Captain's Logs.
Dear Captain's Diary, I may not have found love on this mission, but I did find a cute little companion who excretes starship fuel. And that's just as good.
Captain's Journal. Stardate.
April 13th.
April 13th. Point two. We have failed to uphold Brannigan's Law. However, I did make it with a hot alien babe. And in the end, is that not what man has dreamt of since first he looked up at the stars? Kif, I'm asking you a question.
Oh.
I love it. He wants his rhetorical question answered.
And the last,
I'm asking you a question.
And then the last sound in the episode is Kif's exasperation.
And this episode did air on April 13th, so the star date was correct.
Do your taxes.
Boy, I wonder how late they had to re-record that with Kif, with Maurice and Billy, because they got moved to Tuesdays not long before this episode. Maybe they originally had April 11th in there when they thought they were Sundays.
Well, thankfully that shot was over no characters moving their mouths, so just like come in and say a different date. It's fine.
That's true. Yeah. It's a beautiful shot over, and obviously a parody of every ending to every Star Trek episode ever, where the captain's log sums up everything that happens in the episode and gets to the moral of it. And the moral in this one is that at least Zap got his dick wet. Yes. Like, that's the most important part.
So we're well on our way to meeting almost every character. I think the last major one is Mom.
Yeah,
and maybe Flexo, but that's season
clamps.
Two. Clamps.
The clamps.
Oh, and there's still Lur as well. Let's not forget Lur.
Not everyone can be a main character, guys.
Or also Morbo, who sounds so different from Lur.
Totally different characters.
Yes.
I mean, I will admit Hedonism Bot is a main character.
I apologize for nothing.
Jumbo!
So what do we think about this episode, guys? I love it. Again, I've been really getting into revisiting this series. I thought I was burnt out. I've said it 1,000 times, but like, this is really bringing me in like just how strong this first season is. Usually the first season of the show is just like, oh, they were figuring stuff out. They had so much figured out. Like, very few of these characters would change drastically. Kif, maybe, but he's still pathetic.
You would see adjustments as in season two on things they learned from season one, but this had so much more prep on it than, say, the critics' first season has, or at least that's how it feels.
Or The Simpsons,
totally. And I think, too, this might be one of my favorites. This might be my favorite or second favorite of season one.
Wow.
Just because Zap fucking rules. Like, he's so funny. And Kif. Zap and Kif together, it's almost to the detriment of the show, because it just becomes a Zap and Kif show. They're like, well, let's have more scenes with Zap or Kif.
It's so great how many scenes they could end with just, ugh.
Yes, it's perfect.
Outside of Zap and Kif, I consider this to be one of the weaker ones of the season.
Interesting.
It introduced so many things that are so important, and it is a very funny episode, but I do find myself wanting to get to the fireworks factory with Zap and Kif a lot, where like, I don't really care about this planet, even though it has the windy shrimp on it. But usually, like Futurama, that's when they're telling a classic sci-fi short story, like it feels like I could, the Star Trek episode, if it weren't Star Trek references, I feel like I could have read that in one of those like edited by Robert Heinlein when he was still 21, like one of those books you buy at the used bookstore for $1 that's 50 sci-fi stories.
Yeah, Zap kind of takes over half of the show. It's kind of a, I mean, if you're in terms of a plot, the plot is not that great. It's just like they go to a planet, they stay on Zap ship for a while. I mean, on the way to the planet, they go to Zap's ship, and then they go to the planet, and then it's over. Just like, Zap is the distraction in the middle.
But that being said, you're right. The first season is so strong that being one of the weaker episodes of the first season doesn't mean much. It's very funny.
The only thing that makes me sad is thinking if this was Phil Hartman, and that I would love a universe where he did not marry a horrible woman who murders him, but that if he hadn't done that he could have been him and Troy McClure at the same time, and I swear they would have done a meta joke of Troy McClure playing Zap Brannigan in a Futurama movie on The Simpsons.
Just all we lost with Phil Hartman. It sucks. Not just him as a person, but like all the art he could have made with his great voice and his talent. And God. Sorry to bring everybody down. This has been talking about dead celebrities, but thanks for joining us, and thanks for giving us money. If you're listening to this, you have given us money to support the show. We really appreciate it. Unless you found it on the dark web, and I don't even know where to find things on the dark web, so give me a call. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. Find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. You can also check out my other podcast, Retronauts, at retronauts.com, or look for Retronaut in your podcast machine. If you give me money, I'm pretty sure you know what Retronauts is. I don't have to say anything else. Everybody else, what should we talk about?
Well, let's start to Matthew.
Oh yeah, you should have gone first, Matthew. I'm sorry.
Oh no, it's okay. I'm at Twitter, on Twitter, at Mr. Matt J, and also at Disney80s90s, Disney80s90s, where I tweet cool, weird, obscure things from the Disney company from the 80s and 90s, and I also make a YouTube show that's been a little bit of a hiatus, but will be coming back at some time, called Cartoons 101 at youtube.com/Cartoons101, where I just, whatever I feel like talking about that's animation related. So I could, if I want to do an episode of Futurama, I'll do it. We'll see. I might not, but I might.
I like that openness to it. You can follow me on Twitter, HENEREYG, where I tweet out tons of stuff when there's new things, and on this Patreon as well as funny thoughts, and I try to make now, if I ever make a joke about news of the day, I do try to include one Frankie Yak picture from there. But though I should start using there's a Frankie Yak of Futurama.
Warbotron.
Yeah, I should be using that more often. But anyway, yeah, follow me there, and thanks for listening and for your support.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening and donating. We'll see you next week for Fear of a Bot Planet. See you then.
Definitely escape, Bender. All you have to do is bend the hatch off this steam pipe.
Hey, yeah!
No good, it's full of steam!